Welcome to episode number 52 of the ET PhD Team Podcast with myself and Anna is back. Hi Anna.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
I am good, thank you.
Good, are you refreshed?
I am refreshed. I had a wonderful time away in rainy Wales and I'm now fully vaccinated too.
Oh, I forgot you were fully vaccinated. I'm jealous.
So better than everyone really are.
My friend got her second one today, actually. She's immunocompromised. You and your diabetes.
I know, yeah, me and my fake diabetes. I did try and sort it. I was honest, but
no. Why lying? Why are you trying to fudge the system? It's okay. I won't tell anyone. Okay. Any news in your week?
No, not really. It's been a pretty sweet week. I was speaking to Dan Biceps and Banter about it because I was saying that I was going away in one of my check-ins and he was like, oh yeah, if you're anything like me, you struggle getting back into it. But once I got back at the weekend, I was like raring to go. And I think that's just a sign that, well, no, I think he likes his job, but I was like, really happy to be back.
That's the thing. I feel like when we take holidays, it's not a holiday to get away from your job. It's genuinely a holiday to restore and really just like get that energy back. And then when you get back, you're just so desperate to get back into it again. That's how
exactly
I always feel.
That. Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. Because it wasn't even like a chill holiday. The dog went up Snowdon. We had a great time walking about, getting lost. It was, yeah, fab. But
the dog went all the way up Snowdon.
All the way up. And thank God he did. A lot of people were looking at me being pulled up by a dog. I was like, yes.
God, what a hero. What a hero.
Well, he snuck a week. I think he's knackered.
Don't blame him. I would. Snowdon's hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I missed you last week. Did you see that I did a podcast and had to record it twice?
I did.
That was pretty spectacular for me. And I just thought, this is what happens when I try and do it myself.
So dedication and re-recorded it. So.
You know what it was? It was dedication and a giant glass of wine. I'd done another live before it and I just thought, I'm just going to tank this glass of wine in the podcast. Not that I was drunk or advocate binge drinking by any stretch of the imagination, of course.
No, but sometimes it's just needed.
Yeah. Did you see that I also learned how to skateboard last week? This is very exciting for me.
Oh yeah. How's the injury?
Well, I'm fine now. My bruise is still ginormous on my knee. My foot is okay. I'm actually okay. Emma was like, you can skateboard in your 30s. You just can't learn to skateboard in your 30s. I was like, just watch me. Just watch me. Yeah. I was pretty treacherous, but I'm going to try again, and then I'm going to get a skateboard for. Because I feel like skateboards, obviously I used to rollerblade, you know, last year, and then they broke. But I feel like skateboarding is so much better because you can take it off, you know, like with blades, once they fall, once you want to stop, you have to keep them on because you don't have shoes. With a skateboard, you just pick it up and have a snack and then get back on.
I think my skateboard's still in the garage that I used maybe for about 6 months. Same as a guitar when I was trying to impress boys.
But yeah, that's really why I'm doing it. Actually, it's definitely not.
I knew it.
Definitely not. The one friend I have that does like to skateboard is not, we're not trying to impress each other. So I'm just, yeah, sadly not. But you know, anyone out there. Okay, you have more questions for me. So do you want to go for it?
Yes, going to start with training one. How do I grow my butt? Seriously, I know that I have small glute genetics, but I would like to just work with what I've got. I seem to have plateaued in hip thrusts. Are some people just destined to have small butts forever?
No. Like genetically, of course, genetically we are predisposed to have muscle and fat in different areas. And some people have genetically larger arses and glutes and store their fat there as well. I think that's a really common, like a common misconception. People, for me, I know that a lot of my arse is fat and people will think it's not, like some of it's glutes, but a lot of it's, I'm quote unquote lucky, I suppose, in that sense that I store a lot of fat there. Don't store any of my boobs, but that's another matter. So really it's the same as any other muscle group, except with glutes, you can usually take more volume. So if I was programming someone in terms of volume, I would look at roughly 10 to 20 sets across the week of per muscle group. But with glutes, tend to be, I would err towards 20 to 30 sets, ranging, like progressing up that usually with some abduction, hinge, squat. But what am I missing here? Drum. There we go, thrust. I was like, what am I missing? Inclusion of all of those types of lifts on that number of sets, and making sure you're progressively overloading, and ideally you're eating in a surplus. And that's kind of it. Like, I mean, what would you add to that? I'm sure that I've oversimplified it, but I do feel like it is.
No, that it is just that. I felt exactly the same. I have a family gene of just having a back string.
Back string?
Yeah, like straight down from the back. But I think, like you said, once you're programming and working on progressive overload and making sure you're eating enough, it does grow just very slowly in my case.
Yeah, and also it takes time. Like, it takes a lot of time. Remember how slow muscle growth is? It's barely visible from 1 year to the next. If you're doing these things, your glutes will be adapting. It's just that you don't always necessarily see it, at least initially. So just have to persevere. I mean, how long have you been weight training for, out of interest?
8 years?
Yes, probably not. Yeah, probably not entirely dissimilar to me, actually, consistently. So that's
consistently is an entirely
matter. Like, going into the gym with a plan for about 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So same, really. It takes a lot of time. I think people really forget that, not this person specifically, but it's so easy to look on Instagram and think that this is how hard this person trains, or this is how this person trains, and they've got this much muscle, and it's like, okay, but they've got 10 years behind them where they've gained that muscle beforehand. So just persevere.
Also, I see this client's check-ins all the time, and her glutes are growing. They're looking phenomenal. So
excellent. See? Okay. How do you deal with feeling overwhelmed without letting it consume you?
Breathe. that's my go-to. Breathe. And
yep. Same.
And I still remind myself of what you said, in that whatever you've got to do, you always get done.
I think that's, yeah, it's so true. And me and my friends say this all the time. The easiest way to stop like getting really stressed is to recognize that you've always got it done before. And even when you haven't got it done, you've survived not getting it done. If you've been late for a deadline, you've been late for a deadline. You always get it done. If the overwhelm is to do with feelings, maybe away from like things to do and stress, get it out. Like you said, breathing is just the best. Walking, make sure that you're taking time to do these things. When you're overwhelmed, it's the easiest time to sack off meditation and sack off exercise and sack off things that make you feel good. But when you're overwhelmed, it's even more essential to do these things and make time. And one of the best things I've learned from being that overworker to being someone now who's productive without getting sick with it in general, is ensuring that I have non-negotiables that are meditation, exercise, getting out for a walk, it's a bedtime. Like, it's about being really, really consistent with the things that you know help you. That, I think, really helps.
Yeah. How do I manage recognizing the difference between eating a little more than planned versus overeating versus binging, and any worry or guilt I have associated?
So how do you differentiate between overeating and overeating and then just eating more than planned, or overeating and binge eating?
All three.
Right. Okay. Okay. So overeating and binge eating, they're often confused. And binge eating is the distinction with binge eating is that you have a distinct loss of control. So you physically, you often feel out of body and you genuinely don't feel you have any control over that situation. And if someone was holding a knife to you and said, stop eating, you feel like you wouldn't be able to do it. That's probably a bit extreme, but to give you an idea. Whereas overeating, if you really had to stop, if someone was standing there saying you must stop, you could stop. Or if, you know, something came up, you could stop. But with binge eating, and I think this is a really common misconception, especially in the fitness industry, actually, is that people brush off a binge and they'll say, oh, you only eat a packet of biscuits. That's not a binge. I can just do that regularly. But it's not about the amount of food that you eat. And if you have a subjective binge, which is maybe just half a packet of biscuits, say, but you still feel completely out of control, that has the same impact on your quality of life than eating a full pizza, a tub of ice cream, 5 donuts, etc., if you still have that same feeling. So the amount is not actually important when it comes to binging. It's that loss of control. And then if you think between overeating, I would say is, there's no clear distinction here. If you're saying like you consistently overeat, I would say you eat a lot more than planned. And that's really, really not a helpful kind of subcategory there at all. But that's how I would really explain it. Whereas eating more than planned would be, so for example, say you were hungry and you were dieting, right? And you ate more than planned because you ate an extra protein bar because you were hungry. You maybe say, I overate my macros that day. That's fine. Or if you're not tracking and you just... if you're not tracking and you eat a couple of like extra protein bars, as an example, you're not really overeating because you're honouring what you want and need at that time. Whereas, you know, the kind of classic overeating is that, I hate this word excessive, but an abnormally large amount of food. I would say that would be the distinction.
What, yeah, I'm feeling uncomfortably full.
Yeah.
I agree, yeah.
It's hard to think about, like, that one I've not actually been asked before, but it's a great question.
Yeah, and then any worry or guilt associated with it, how to manage those feelings?
It's, I think, figuring out where that guilt has come from. Like, what do you feel guilty for? Often we think we feel guilty because we've eaten something. Is it that? Or do you feel guilty because you have not been perfect? And then it all comes back onto the perfectionist stuff that we talk about all the time. Or do you feel guilty because it's a certain type of food, therefore you need to work on your food neutrality? Do you feel guilty because you've got a goal of something like fat loss and it wasn't in line with your goal? You know, there's no guilt there. It's just like, okay, I recognize that I feel this way because I didn't eat in line with my values, therefore I'm going to think about my values next time I eat. So really being curious about where that guilt comes from, or the guilt might come from something external. It might come from a comment from someone else. It might come from, I don't know, some value that you've got set on you from someone else, in which case you need to start looking at your boundaries. So there's so many things that could be triggering that guilt. And then think, like, is it rational? Is it fact or is it feeling? So is the guilt that you, is it really the guilt over 200 calories? Like, realistically, rationally, is, I don't know, let's say 500, is 500 calories going to do anything to you? It's really not. So if you can be rational about that, which all of our clients are, because they have this education and we talk about these things, you know that that's not really going to do anything to your body. It's really not. So being rational with yourself and saying it's not, and think about, I chose to eat this because I wanted to eat it. There's no guilt in eating, and then just moving forward. And I know it's easier said than done, but really trying to be rational about it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I know if a client has had an episode in the week and they come to check in, especially if we're new to working to each other, with each other, they're always quite surprised. I'm like, well, it's happened. It's okay. We accept, we move on. Like you said, we figure out the whys. And that's it. It's not a case of brushing it off, but it's happened. It's okay.
Yeah.
Oh, what is this? I'm like, compassion.
Welcome, friend.
Yeah.
You're totally right, though. What does guilt and shame are not helpful. For some, For some people, guilt can be helpful, not when it comes to food, but in other actions. So, for example, if you cheat on your boyfriend, the guilt that you feel will stop you from cheating on someone again, most likely, unless you're an arsehole. Or you've got issues that you need to go to therapy for. Let's be a bit nicer. That guilt potentially could help you. But when it comes to food, there is just no helpful, there's no helpful outcome of feeling guilty around food. And especially if you overeat because you were hungry. I think I say this in the starter pack that we sent out, like feeling guilty for being hungry is like feeling guilty for needing a pee or for being thirsty or being heartbroken, all of these things that are natural human physiological responses, and yet we choose hunger to feel bad for. Why is that any different from anything else? Oh, because it's not anything to do with us. It's because of diet culture. Not that we're against dieting, but we're talking about diet culture specifically here. Okay. Sometimes when I start eating, I can feel hungry or hungrier. Is there an explanation or a reason for this? When I'm super busy, I can easily forget to eat, or if I'm hungry, or forget if I'm hungry. So I've moved house and had lots to sort, including building furniture, so nearly didn't eat all day and didn't notice or have any hunger pangs. Is this because I'm used to ignoring my hunger cues, or do most people get that way if they're busy? I would just like to say that this person worded that question very well. It was just my reading that messed that up. So I just, that was all me. So what do you think?
So I think I was always someone that was like, I don't understand people that like just forget to eat. But I think you can become so busy that it's not a case of ignoring, you're just completely distracted and involved in what you're doing.
Yeah, so it's not an intentional ignorance, it's genuinely you are just
and then like in my case, it's not happened for a while, I'm a bit more on it now. But in my case, when I did notice it, I was like, oh crap, I should have eaten. I'm I'm gonna have something now and make sure I have some larger meals later on in the day and balance it out. But what was the first part, getting hungrier as you eat?
Yeah, so when I start eating, I can feel hungry or hungrier. Is there an explanation or a reason for this? It's most likely because you are stimulating your response to eating, so your saliva production, etc., the way that your body responds to taste. There are certain physiological responses that get your body quote-unquote ready to digest that food. When you eat, you don't immediately get a drop in hunger, like ghrelin, for example. It doesn't just immediately drop. Ghrelin is the hormone responsible for making us, our tummies rumble. So you wouldn't immediately see a drop in hunger in that sense. So it's probably just that you've started to think about food. It's not the act of eating, although there is some physiological response there initially, but it's the act of you are now smelling food, you're now tasting food, and even the smell of food or the thought of food has this impact on our physiological responses. And so we get hungrier and we produce saliva, and we actually, it's like when you walk into Sainsbury's and you can smell the bread, it's like, oh my God, I'm starving. But it's that we do get a physiological response. So that's probably what's happening when you start to eat and you're noticing all these smells and foods and things. So that's most likely what's happening. And I agree with everything you said. I'm not going to repeat everything that you've said. I think it's not abnormal. I mean, I've never been that person that forgets about food in general, but it's not abnormal by any means. Especially if you're used to under-eating or not eating often. That's why as you continue to get into a regular eating pattern, that happens to you less and less. And I know that, like, I don't know if this happened to you, but when I was competing and I was really regimented with my meal times, it would be like, even if I was 10 minutes off, if I was in a lab, say, and I was teaching for 3 hours, as soon as the clock hit that time that I would normally eat, my stomach would be rumbling and get used to it.
Oh my God, finally.
Literally, it's like your body just knows the time, which is one thing I really love about eating intuitively, is that you can go for ages without eating if you're busy, but you can also eat more regularly, and it's not like you have that regimented time that you have to eat all the time, although that can be so helpful for so many people.
I had the back of my post yesterday about restriction around food, and obviously one of the restrictions is eating at certain times, and then someone was like, well, how do you break it? And I think I answered it on one of my questions yesterday, in that you start challenging that ideal Even if it's just 5 or 10 minutes, because like you said, when it hits whatever time, you're like, oh, I need to eat. But just changing it, seeing how it feels, how your body responds, that's a nice step into eating more intuitively as well.
Absolutely, and absolutely that. It doesn't have to be this big overhaul. It can just be like, right, I'm just going to wait half an hour and get on my work and just notice the difference in how that feels. I think with all of this stuff, when you're reestablishing your hunger cues and fullness cues, and whether you're eating intuitively or not, it's about being curious about what you feel, curious about what your body feels like, curious about, well, what happens if I try this or do something different or stop doing this. And it's all just a learning experience, and it's a really cool one because you just get to know your body a lot more.
Is self-sabotage a natural / common occurrence when things are going well? Do we know why?
Is it natural and common? I don't know if I would call it any of those things. I would say it happens. I want to normalize it in the sense that it happens to a lot of people, but I don't want it to be like a, well, of course that's going to happen, because that's a normal response. And there are so many reasons why it can happen. Self-sabotage is really where you have a goal, or you think you have a goal, and you're working towards that goal, and then you stop working towards that goal. You start taking actions that are out of alignment with that goal. And so it could be, there are so many reasons for it. It could be that you just don't want it hard enough, like what people say sometimes. I think I said it on my story the other day. I said that on my story the other day, actually. And I said two things on my story the other day. And my friend voice noted me in the morning. She said, I've just been watching your stories and it just looks like you woke up today and chose violence. But sometimes I just do. I think my violence is quite nice. So there are lots of reasons why you might not actually want that goal, and so actually you just keep doing it. It's not even self-sabotage, you just don't really want it enough, and that's okay. You can also self-sabotage because you are kind of like procrastination. You're scared of the outcome, you're scared of the success of the outcome. So this is a really pathetic example, but we're going to go with it. If you're trying to improve your relationship with food and you are in a good place with it, but you keep, when you finally feel settled, you then fall back into disordered eating habits in some way, and you're working with Anna, and you keep falling back into these habits, and you just think, why though? Because my relationship with food is good. Why do I keep doing this? And then you actually look at it and you say, well, and Anna says to you, well, what happens when you actually finally get to this place where you don't have these habits anymore? And then you say, oh, well, then I won't have you as my coach anymore. And that scares me. And then you go, okay, well, what happens if, you know, I said we'll still be in contact once a month? How does that change? And then you feel more at ease. And then maybe you have less of these habits. I know that's really simplified, right? But that's actually something I've seen with clients before who are leaving. And they say, we've got a month left together. And they've been nailing everything for 3-4 months. And then they tell me that they're leaving. And then in the last month, the first 2 weeks usually of that month, they go, I don't really know what's happened. And it's just that fear of what comes next. So that's one reason why you might self-sabotage. And another might be that fear of leaving behind what you already have. So you might not think that maybe you are trying to lose body fat for your health. Okay, let's say that your BMI is higher than ideal for your health. But within your friends, you're comfortable being that person, you identify with that body, you are, you know, like your friends know you in that body, your partner fell in love with you in that body. You eat on a Friday night with your family. You've got all of these traditions and identity and belief of self tied up in that body. But you know that you want to lose body fat, and your family supports it, everyone supports it, and you know that that's good for your health. But you start to lose body fat, and then you, for some reason, just can't stick to it, and you keep falling back into it, and you keep gaining it again. And sometimes it's this internal fear of, what am I leaving behind? If I change this body, is my partner still going to love me when I'm in a different body, when he fell in love with this body? Or will my mum stop you know, will she start making judgments about me because I'm not eating on a Friday night with her the way that she wants me to eat? These types of things. So we all have these thoughts. We all, quote unquote, self-sabotage to some degree in some way, shape or form. It doesn't have to be like relationships when it gets too close and you mess it up because you're scared of the success of that relationship because you fall in love and then what that means. We all do this to some degree. Obviously, that's not what I do.
Sorry, can't relate.
Getting over there, Anna. old self. But we all do it to some degree. And it's not about saying this is a total normal, healthy response. It's not a normal, healthy response. It's a response to something that you're not dealing with, but it's not uncommon. That was such a monologue. I'm just going to sit back and chill now. Did I answer the question?
Oh, yeah. I just let you roll. You were on a roll.
Went off on one. Okay, how to not ruin it all going out for drinks. Oh, sorry. What is with me today? I would like to say, by the way, I've had 2 sips of rosé wine. This is not an alcohol-induced
rosé.
Well, do you know what it's caused? Do you know why it is? Earlier, I was doing my assignment and I like to write with a glass of day wine because it's very, very much helps my productivity.
That's like day wine, night wine.
Yes, but I had the day wine at 2:30 in the afternoon. So I thought, it's not really lunchtime. It's not a white wine. It's not dinner time. So I thought, do you know what it is? It's a sunny day. It's a midway. It's a rosé. So that's the leftovers from that. So this is not me. This is not me under the influence of alcohol by any means. This is literally just me struggling to get my words out for some reason. Okay, I'm going to go again. How to not ruin it all going out for a friend's birthday, losing control as soon as you've had a few drinks.
Rehydrate and pace yourself. Well, that helped, but but I think a few weeks ago we had a similar, and it's a case of kind of just deciding what you're going to do that is in line with your values and your goals right now. So if you are worried that having drinks might then impact food choices and you become mindless with your eating, then maybe go out with and just say, I'm only going to have 1 or 2, and then move on to soft drinks so I feel good and I can make decisions that I'm happy with.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not about saying that you can't do these things. You can absolutely go out for drinks and get hammered if you want to get hammered. It's not about us saying that you shouldn't be doing these things. It's about saying what do you want to do and how do you make an empowered choice in line with what is important to you right now. And that might be, like you said, a couple of drinks and then going on to soft drinks. That's absolutely fine. It might not be. I think realistically, learning to be mindful of your alcohol consumption is just as important as learning to be mindful of your food intake. And again, this is not a preachy thing. I drink tequila. This is not me saying that you shouldn't do these things, but it's about what actually does make you feel good and just learning to take ownership of it. It's the same as, you know, if you're not eating pizza all the time and then you have it, you often will overindulge in it because you don't have it often. And it's the same with alcohol. I'm not telling you to drink every day. Make that disclaimer right now. I'm just telling you to just think about, are you trying to just get out of your system? Why are you doing that? Is it because you're not allowing yourself to have a glass of wine on a Tuesday night if you want that? And again, I'm not telling you to do that. I'm really mindful of what I'm saying here, but just really figuring out why it is. Like, are you over drinking? Are you drinking to the point of actually you're drinking because you are trying to not feel something, maybe? Or is it peer pressure? Do you need to set some boundaries there? Do you need to go have them in place before you go?
I don't mind sharing with you and the podcast.
Everyone else.
Last week when I was away, I took a really cute video of the tent that, like I said, posh tent that I was staying in, because it had a little like sink and dining table. It was really, really cute. Took a video, sent it to my mum, was going to put it on Instagram. My mum was like, you took two bottles of wine and that is a pint glass you served yourself. I was like, all right, judgy.
Is that why you didn't put it on Instagram?
I was like, look, two nights, I'm not going to drink it all. I did come back with one. It was fine. But she put the panic in me, so I was like, all right, I went.
That's so funny. That's funny, because why do we still care? When I,
oh, I know, I know.
When I put that video up, you might not have seen it because you were away, but when I was doing my assignment and I said, oh, I'm just drinking my day wine because it helps me productivity, I kind of stand by that. And then I put it up and I thought, should I have not put that on Instagram? Is that really bad for me to say that I'm drinking wine at 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon to do my work? And then I thought, no, it's authentic, right? And then people were like, I'm glad you've normalised this. I was like, oh, good. I'm just trying to... But you do, you question yourself, don't you? And you think, oh.
Yeah, well, yeah, I didn't think anything of it. I was like, oh. Good. Okay. Okay, I feel like I'm entering new territory where I'm eating what I want and not overly bothered about putting weight on, but then I get random intrusive thoughts like I'm letting myself go and anxious about how my appearance is changing due to weight gain. Sometimes I'm not sure if I'm eating because I genuinely want the food or because I have thoughts like, oh, well, I'm not dieting and I can eat however much I want now with no restrictions. How do you strike the balance between unconditional permission to eat and setting boundaries with yourself around food without them feeling like rules or restrictions?
Great question. I would say the latter does wear off. Well, I'm not dieting, so I'll just eat whatever. That does wear off, and it does, but it does happen to a lot of us and it does take time. That sometimes still happens to me. Like if I've thought, oh, maybe I'll get leaner for something, just kind of casually, and then I obviously immediately I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that, and I'll have those moments. That's quite normal when you come out of dieting or when you've always been trying to stay small to have that, and it sometimes takes longer than you think it does to go away. So if you do feel that way, don't berate yourself for it, because that will pass. The novelty of not dieting, when not dieting becomes the norm as opposed to trying to keep yourself small is the norm, then that mindset will shift. So that's the first thing I would say. Do the obvious things that we talk about a lot in terms of, you know, asking yourself, are you actually hungry? Or say, why am I eating this right now? What's my reason for eating this? If it's delicious, that's absolutely fine. If it's because I'm hungry, also absolutely fine. If it's because I can, okay, fine. It is fine, but is that really what you want to do? To check in with what you value, your health and what your focuses are, and see how that aligns. I would also say the first part of that question, when you have those intrusive thoughts, a good idea, well, I say that's a good idea, it's my idea, and it might not be a good idea, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. An idea is to write down those intrusive thoughts. So as they come in, or wait, if you know what they are, write them down. On your phone is a good place, because you never know where these intrusive thoughts are just going to like pound their way into your brain. And then next to your intrusive thought in your notes, put an affirmation. So example, what was the example she gave at the beginning?
I'm really letting myself go.
I'm really letting myself go. So when that thought comes into your head, an affirmation might be, I'm learning to trust my body. Or an affirmation might be, my body is being nourished. It can be anything that matches that intrusive thought, but in a more affirming, helpful way. And it will be something specific to you. So you don't need to have this huge, big, long list of them. But if you've got a couple of intrusive thoughts that you know come in, think of the affirmation, and when it does pop into your head, go, okay, my affirmation is this, and I'm just going to sit there, breathe, and just breathe in the affirmation, repeat it into your head. And then if you can, say, right, once that affirmation is done, I'm going to get back to the present moment and I'm going to carry on with my day. And again, I know it's very easy to say this, but it takes work, but it's doable.
Oh, I know she'll like that one. She's a big fan of affirmations.
That is excellent. Okay, My sister's a little bit obsessed with exercising and overtrained, especially with cardio. She's in amazing shape because of this, but I find it triggering as she posts about it on her Instagram, on our family group chat all the time. It makes me feel like I should be doing more cardio and working out for longer than I am. I know you normally say when you find something triggering to unfollow it, but it's a little difficult to remove it when it's your sister. I do try to reassure myself by saying that I'm on my own journey and she's on hers, and it doesn't matter what others are doing, focus on myself. But I do still find it hard to not get triggered by her exercising habits. I love her to pieces, but when I'm feeling triggered by her exercise, I find myself in a mood with her and become snappy with her. And then this makes me feel awful, as I don't want to be this way with her at all. Do you have any tips to help me work through this?
You don't have to unfollow her, but you can mute her so you just don't see what she's doing.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like this is, I don't want this to sound harsh, because you've said everything that you know you are working on and should be doing, but it's almost like that it's not sinking in yet.
Yeah.
Yes, you're on your own journey. She can do what she wants. You're both separate people and live your own lives. And I think you really need to hone in on that and reaffirm what you're doing with your values and your goals, and set some boundaries around it as well. Like, if you can have a discussion with her, maybe about the family chat, and just say, I'm working on this right now. I'm not finding this helpful. Please, can we stop talks around food or exercise and training?
Yeah, I totally agree. Boundaries with your family are the hardest ones to set, but boundaries with your family can be the most influential in terms of the way that you think. And if you do it, if you're not doing it in response to something, like as a reaction, and you're just doing it off the cuff when you're in a goal and a nice, having a nice chat, and you just say, do you know what, just an FYI, it makes me, like, I feel a bit triggered when, or not even triggered, I feel a bit crappy when I see how much exercise you're doing and I'm trying to work on my strength. Would you mind it if you just didn't post that? Like you said, it feels scary. You or use the boundaries technique that I put on my Instagram recently. It's like, it's okay that you want to share your exercise, but it's not okay to put into the group chat if I feel triggered. That might be a bit harsh in this situation, but you can reword it into a softer way. I think as well, this is potentially a slightly less optimistic way of dealing with this, but here we are. Think about all the things that you would be missing out on if you were doing that. Think about how you would feel. I know how hard this person trains, and she trains bloody hard, right? How would your training be if you were doing more cardio? How would your sleep be if you were in the gym for an extra 45 minutes a day? How would your energy levels be throughout the day for your socializing, for your work? How would that all look if you doubled the amount of exercise that you were doing? And would that be worth losing more body fat for? Like, is that... Would you prioritize that over this? And this is not, I'm not trying to be negative about your sister or how she feels or her energy levels or anything like that. But the space that you're in mentally is a very different space to that she's in. And again, I'm not saying which is better, but for you personally, I know that this person is in a really good place with where she is at the moment. So think about all the things you would lose out on if you started doing things like that again, and keep that in the forefront of your mind when you're seeing this stuff and you go, well, that's fine, but I wouldn't want to do that. It's the same as me, like, so when people stop competing, I don't know if you felt this, but when you first stop competing, it can be a bit like, oh, you see people compete again and you go, oh, I kind of wish I was back on stage, I'm a bit jealous. And I think someone asked me about that last year and said, how do you deal with watching people on stage when you're not doing it anymore? And you go to, and I would say to myself, like, well, I don't binge on my pizza anymore. I just eat it. And I don't eat to the point of pain anymore. I just eat. And I have a sex drive again. And I didn't have sex for a long time. And it's all of these things that would go, you can run through your head and say, actually, this is why. This is far more important to me than that initial buzz on that stage that you get when you look like that. For me personally, again, this is not judgment of other people doing it, but just an example.
Yeah. I did struggle with it. So I remember I think we'd worked together for a few months, and then I was like, do I want to compete? And you didn't ever say no, but then I was like, yeah, no, I really don't want to. just no.
Yeah. And yeah, I think maybe it was you that I was thinking about, actually, when I was thinking about who I had that conversation with. It just was so long ago that, well, that's good.
No, like you said, I just know that I'm at a place now. I mean, when I competed, I was a baby. I think I did my first one at 20 or 21. Whereas now, I don't have the time for that. I don't want to miss out on all the other stuff that I'm really enjoying doing. It's just like, hats off to people that do, and yeah, if that's what you want to do, great. But for me, no, not anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not a judgment. It's the same with me for dieting. Like I was trying to do handstands about a month ago, and I realized my body weight was just, I tipped a little bit to the point where my handstands were a bit crappy, and I thought, oh god, like, if I want to keep doing really good handstands, am I going to have to actually like diet or something? And I had this discussion with my friend, and I thought, I can't imagine me ever wanting to prioritize that. So in the end, I've just started doing some HIIT, and now that's the extent of what I've done, and that's great. But it's the same. It's not about competing. It's about anything. It's about saying, I wouldn't put myself through dieting right now, not because dieting is bad, just because I cannot be arsed, and it's not what I want to do. And that's totally okay. But it's absolutely okay if you are arsed. It's absolutely okay if you're arsed to compete in all of these things. It's absolutely fine. There's never any judgment here. It's just where we are personally at.
I'm so overwhelmed by everything this week. I can't stop eating. Then I overthink, bully myself about it, then blame my loneliness on it. In my head, no one wants a fat girlfriend. Then I get angry with myself, and round it goes. I feel I know what I should do to start helping myself, but I just can't seem to do it. Is it self-sabotage, or am I secretly happy being a twat to myself? I was going to rephrase, but I was like, no. It's so hard to know. How do I break this cycle? It's all I can think about.
What, are you happy being a twat to yourself? Like, do you genuinely feel good being a twat to yourself? I'm going to say you probably don't, but I'm not here to tell you how you feel. We often treat ourselves the way that we think we deserve to be treated. That's one thing I will say. When we believe something about ourselves, we take action in line with that. And if we believe that we are not worth something, we will take action in line with that. And again, I'm going to talk back to relationships. If you don't believe you are worth a relationship, say, or a friendship, or being a parent, then you will stop yourself from doing those things, because it confirms to you that you are right, and we would rather be right. And so we take actions in line with what we think is right. So if you think you're a twat, I don't know if we're supposed to say that word. However, here we are again. If you think that about yourself, then the chances are you're going to take action in line with that. So yes, there are a lot of things we can do with like your overeating, and Anna will be doing all of those things. But if you don't think you're worth it, then all of the eating stuff is just kind of a gloss over. So you need to think about like, where's your self-worth? I'm sure you have some self-worth, but where do you think you're enough? If you don't, where has that come from, and how are you going to act on that to start accepting yourself as you are, and recognizing that you as you are is already enough, without sounding like an Instagram meme? I realize I do now. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I think like you said, this comes down to self-worth and not believing that you're enough to treat yourself in a way that you deserve to be treated.
It sounds so easy, doesn't it, to say, well, okay, it's because I don't deserve it now. How do I make myself feel worth it? It's not just an overnight, okay, I'm worth it because L'Oreal said I am. I think it's a constantly.
I was thinking, I was like, which shampoo is it?
I actually think they're in my email for tomorrow. I think I've read something similar to this in my email. Yeah, or today actually. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have anything else really to add there other than to really start working on that side of things.
Yeah.
Okay, change of tact. How can you be happy with where you are with your body but also want to change? And can you talk about how these are conflicting ideas? I think you had a Brené Brown quote in there, of course, but I haven't been able to find any more information on it. So I think I gave this person a Brené quote on our call. Can you be talk about can you be happy with where you are and with your body but also want to change? So I talk about this on EIQ Nutrition, the paradoxical theory of change. Gestalt, if anybody wants to read into it, but it's this idea that only when you're content with yourself are you able to change. And it's a paradox because we think we have to change in order to be content with ourselves, but actually it's a lot easier to take action in line with what you deserve and what you are worth, because you already feel that you are enough as you are, so then you can start making changes. So in the sense of dieting, I think it's when I talk about it on EIQ, I'm talking about it in the sense of dieting, in the sense of you can't hate yourself into dieting. It doesn't work. And you see this again on Instagram all the time. I don't think people know what they're talking about when they say you can't hate your body into change. Well, you need some sort of explanation behind that. And that this is where I get the explanation from, at least to some degree. So it's not about saying you need to love your body and then you can drop body fat. It's about saying you have to accept your body for everything that it is. And again, we talk about body neutrality all the time, but accepting your body for the amazing vessel that it is for your soul and what it gives you every day and the health that it brings you and the life that it brings you. And when you can be, say, right, I love my body enough to now treat it in the way that it deserves to be treated. And that might be dieting for you if you've got to drop body fat for your health. It could be lots of other actions as well. So it's not about aesthetically loving your body in order to be able to change it. That being said, I think that you can be happy with your body and still think, I want to change it. Like, I got nose surgery, didn't I? I was never happy with my nose, to be honest, but I was quite happy with myself. And I still got that done. It didn't change who I was as a person. So it didn't change my sense of self. It didn't change my happiness. It just meant that I could do videos for work without crying. So yeah, I think it's distinguishing between like your sense of self, your body, loving your body, body neutrality, and getting to your place to like that, finding that place of contentment and worth in order to make changes that are important to you because you deserve to make those changes.
I think it's Glennon that I read. What was it? Everyone needs a platform of self-worth to make change.
Oh, get that one on your Instagram.
I know. Such an influencer now. That can be the next one for, you know, you can't hate yourself happy or whatever.
Oh, yeah. That is a classic, isn't it?
But yeah, no, I think, yeah, it's so true. And like you said, it's not a case of loving your body. It's accepting it, knowing that as it is right now, it's good enough.
Mm. Exactly that.
Is it one more?
Yeah, one more. I was starting to say that's like you read my mind.
Where should we? How to deal with friends, family who make you feel bad about healthy choices you make for you, which might make them feel bad about themselves and they reflect that back on you. For example, not drinking at a party, ordering a healthy choice when you go out to dinner. I get comments like that's no fun, and it can make me feel bad about doing what's right for me but makes others feel bad about their own choices.
Question: they don't make you feel bad, you feel bad in response to what they're saying. And I know that sounds like such a cop-out, but it's something that actually, that is a technique that is also used in some therapeutic approaches as well. No one can make you feel anything. You can absolutely change the way you feel in response to certain things. But when someone said to me, you're boring, you're eating a salad, I choose to tell them to piss off because it has no impact on their lives, what I choose to do. It doesn't remotely impact me because I choose not to let it. That being said, it absolutely would have impacted me many times before. So this is certainly not a, I don't understand where you're coming from thing. This happens all the time and it's completely normal to feel triggered, especially when it's your family, because you care what they think. You care that they, you want their acceptance, right? So you don't want them to be commenting and judging you. Judging doesn't feel nice to anyone. But I think that's the first thing. Recognize that you have a choice in how you respond. So you can sit with it and get pissed off, or you can say, that's their opinion. They're absolutely entitled to think I'm boring for eating a salad. That says a lot about them if that's genuinely impacting their state of mind that you're eating a salad or whatever it is you're choosing to eat. It's not about you. And you can sit with that and you can say, oh my God, I'm really boring. Or you can say, this is in line with what's important to me and I'm going to move on. And again, it's very simplified, but that's one thing that I would say. Again, we've talked about boundaries on this podcast already. So I would talk about potentially setting some boundaries with them. The other thing I would say is we often tend to feel judged when we judge others. And this is something that I have 100% been guilty of in the past. I would judge others for eating a certain way, not eating enough, eating too much, in my opinion, not caring about what they were eating. And I would say, well, like, I would, even if I wouldn't say it out loud, I would think it. And this is something you really need to think, like, really hold yourself accountable to, because I'm sure I do it in other walks of life too. Like, not, I don't do it with food, obviously, anymore, but I'm sure I do it in other parts. Like, if you feel judged on the way that you're eating, it's probably because you might judge them a little bit. And I think from the wording of your question, when you say they don't care about this stuff and they choose unhealthy foods or something, it sounds to me that there maybe is a little bit of judgment there. And this is not a criticism at all. But just as it's not for them to comment on what you're doing, it's not for you to think or comment on what they're doing. Your choices are yours and their choices are theirs. And you don't have to understand each other. You just have to find a place where you can sit with your decisions and own your decisions, because your decisions are what's important to you.
Yeah, I think the only thing I was going to add to that is, if you choose to feel bad for the choices that you make, it's just taking time away from time and energy away from feeling good and having a good time with your friends and family. That is only thing I have to add to that.
I agree. Okay, great questions, everyone. Thank you very much. Keep them coming. We'll be back next week. Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.